Good morning and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me this week is Dr. Frank Cunningham, pediatric emergency medicine specialist and head of the pediatric emergency medicine at JFK University Medical Center. Good morning, doctor.
Hey, good morning, Joel.
Thank you for being on the program. This is what many consider the most wonderful time of the year, but it's also time for coughs, sneezes, sniffles, viral and bacterial respiratory infections like colds, flus, COVID, RSV, and they all take a toll when you're trying to squeeze in the holiday, end-of-year fun with your friends and family. And to some younger and older patients, this can be dangerous. So let's jump into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 'tis the season for giving, isn't it? So I think it kind of sums it all up right there. But yeah, this is the time when we see a lot of the uptick in respiratory viruses and illnesses related to just the change in weather. Even people were spending more time indoors nowadays and back to school. So a lot of these factors are all compounding and leading to the increase in the respiratory symptoms that we're seeing at this time of year.
Do you find that it's more prevalent or less than before the pandemic?
I think it's definitely more. What's interesting is that some of the viruses that we're seeing, or some of the illnesses we're seeing, we're seeing more of them than we did before. I'm not quite sure I have an explanation for that. I'm not sure anybody else does either, but we're definitely seeing a lot more related subsequent to the pandemic.
Okay, so what can we do? What do you recommend? Where do we start?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, if people are having symptoms, is certainly limit your contact with some of people in your family that may be more vulnerable to developing these infections, particularly the younger infants and elderly, and also any other people in the family who may be immunocompromised.
Got to get immunized.
Immunizations would be very, very important. And also something very simple is basic hand washing. Cover your mouth when you sneeze. Wash your hands frequently. And again, limit your contact with vulnerable people in your family.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be 100% safe, but I'd certainly keeping the air clean by having good ventilation system, changing your air filters in your house ventilation system definitely before the winter time, and then afterwards, just making sure that anybody who's potentially sick in the family that may not be in your own household, that if they are sick, that may not be an optimal time for them to visit in a family gathering setting.
Now, are there any particular things that we're seeing more of this time of year or this year compared to previous years?
Well, I think. Over this last fall and summer, we've seen a large increase in Mycoplasma pneumonia related illnesses. It's always been around, and generally have been mostly in the kind of older age group, like teenagers, et cetera. And most of the time, it's pretty much a mild illness. But what we have been seeing in the younger patients, particularly, are the prevalence of Mycoplasma pneumonias. And I think, not really sure why that's happening, we definitely have seen an uptick in it. And we kind of get suspicious of that this may be going on, particularly if someone has been having symptoms and it's lasting for more than 4 to 5 days or so, and they still have the same symptoms, not getting better. They may or may not have been put on an antibiotic for bronchitis, such as amoxicillin, and they're not getting better, even on the antibiotic. So that's when we kind of start thinking about what other organisms could be prevalent. And most times, it's going to wind up being Mycoplasma as in play here.
Now, Mycoplasma, Mycoplasma pneumonia, is that a type of pneumonia, or is that... We just call pneumonia, but it's actually called Mycoplasma pneumonia.
Yeah. So, the actual bacterium is called Mycoplasma pneumoniae, and when you have pneumonia due to Mycoplasma, we call it Mycoplasma pneumonia. And, you know, this particular, you know, organism is kind of unique because it's not really, doesn't really respond to the antibiotics conventionally, such as amoxicillin, because its structure is a little different as a bacteria. Amoxicillin generally works on the bacterial wall, interrupts the formation of it, whereas Mycoplasma pneumoniae bacteria doesn't really have a wall, and therefore those antibiotics would not be work on that particular organism.
Oh, how do you get this? How do you get pneumonia? Is that something you breathe in?
Yeah, generally, like with all these respiratory illnesses and subsequent bacterial infections, they usually start as a upper respiratory type infection, which cough, cold, sneezing, maybe low grade fever, some congestion, and sometimes fatigue as well.
And you said sometimes the antibiotic doesn't work. What do you do then?
You would use an antibiotic that would work in this particular situation. And most common is a medication called Zithromax or azithromycin.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's a, you know, it's a basically a once-a-day course for 5 days.
The big question, do masks help?
Well, there's a lot of debate on that, whether masks actually really do help. You know, I'm not really so sure, but I think it does probably cut down the possibility. It may not eliminate it 100%, but I think certainly it would limit your ability to at least cast as much basically respiratory viral infection into the atmosphere when you're coughing. It'll cut down on that.
So what other preventative measures can we take? And I want to get into the immunizations again as well, but go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, you know, certainly hand washing and cover your mouth and your nose when you're sneezing. Sneeze into your sleeve or so when you do that or into a tissue, but make sure you wash your hands afterwards. And frequent washing your hands will help decrease the risk.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But, yeah, you mentioned that earlier. I just thought something, because if someone else is sneezing and they don't sneeze into their elbow, what can I do? There's not much I can do. Right?
There's probably not much you could do. You know, the other thing you have to watch out too, especially if you go to, you know, outside a store or anything like that, is those surfaces that you may be touching may be infected or contaminated with somebody else who might have sneezed and then, you know, did those measures and then touch that object, and now you're touching it, and then you touch your face and, you know, get near your eyes or your nose, and next thing you know, you've inoculated yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you just touch anything. It's funny, I do think about that, and I'm not, like, overly crazy about, I mean, I wash my hands and everything, but I don't panic about this stuff. But I do think about that. We're always good. We're going to use a paper towel to open the bathroom door. But there's doors all over the world with handles that we're touching every day, and it's kind of the same thing, right?
Correct. Exactly. Same thing. You ride to Manhattan on the subway, and what are you doing? You don't want to fall down, so you're touching this railing.
Right. You're holding.
You don't know.
Yes.
You know who's touched it before, or anything like that. So yeah, you're constantly at risk for, you know, being in contact with a potential you know, affected organism.
Yeah, there's no way to trace where it happened. You're right. You're on the subway. You're holding on so you don't fall down.
Exactly.
And we don't, I don't think most people think of that. They're just like, oh, I'm sure this pole's clean. It's not in the bathroom.
Yeah, no, that's definitely
filthy.
Not true. Exactly.
Right? And our phones, too. We got to wash our hands and clean our phones regularly.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to do that, and people don't think about it as well. I mean, I do it myself when I come home, you know, from the hospital after a shift. I take, you know, get my phone, I get the alcohol out, and wipe it all down. You know, and you know, it's these are the objects that you come into contact with daily and frequently.
Yeah, anything you touch,
and you touch,
shaking somebody's hand, everything. All right, so let's try and cut down on this with immunizations. What immunizations? When you have a patient, someone brings their child in there. Well, you're doing primary emergency,
correct.
So you're not recommending. They've already got it when they come to you.
They should have. Not everybody does, and
they
you know
think
one
they
of
do.
The challenges. Yeah, you think they do. So you know, generally we generally ask. people about their immunization status, so we can get an idea about you know what we may be up against. I know that you know during the pandemic, probably people got behind in their immunizations, and they probably still haven't been caught up as well. So those are probably one of the biggest barriers for you know getting immunized at that point in time is people just couldn't get access. And they didn't get immunizations, and they're probably playing catch up at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, there's also the you know people that may have some degree of skepticism with regard to the effectiveness of the vaccine, the safetiness of the vaccines
right.
that are out there. I think for the most part, most of the vaccines are pretty safe. But mm-hmm. you know, there's been a lot of you know issues, people concerns about the COVID vaccine.
Sure.
And you know, I think the jury is kind of out on that, but. You know, that kind of vaccine is not mandatory, but certainly, you know, for any kind of school-age kid, you know, they need to be up to date on the immunizations that are accepted for their current schedules that are put out by the state.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find since the vaccination for COVID came out and people were against it or for it, whatever the case may be, do you find people are getting other vaccinations less because of that? You know what I mean?
For the most part, yeah. I don't think the standard vaccines before, you know, are being any less so. There may be still some hesitation, you know, again about people wondering about the safety of the vaccines, how many vaccines a child is getting at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there's still questions about people concerned about. You know, could this be a reason why we're seeing such a large uptick in autism and spectrum disorder? So, there's probably a degree of skepticism and some hesitancy still,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it's a very large thing.
So, what are the immunizations? Like, what should every child have today? Let's say it's January 1st or whenever you get it done yearly. If you can get them all done at once, what is the list of immunizations that a child should have every year?
That
you would recommend,
schedule.
I should say.
Yeah, I mean certainly the child should go according to the schedule with their pediatrician. Should have their you know diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus shots, you know depending on the age, they may get their MMRs and measles, mumps, and rubella,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's other vaccines as well. Now, I don't do primary care, so mm-hmm. I'm not exactly completely up to date on the schedule at this point in time.
Okay.
But there are a number of them. But, I just would advise, parents just to stick to the immunization schedule with mm-hmm. their pediatrician, who is the expert on doing that.
Yeah, check with the pediatrician. But do you ask, the reason I brought that up, because I thought maybe sure. when someone came in for an emergency, you would ask them what immunizations they've gotten or which ones they have already.
Yeah,
does that help
yeah,
you in treating a patient in an emergency?
For the most part, it may not help. If we've got a patient, let's say, who has a particular illness we're concerned about, and we know there's a vaccine for it, we would ask them if they were up to date on this particular vaccine, and that would be probably the extent of what we would do in the emergency department.
All right, we're talking with Dr. Frank Cunningham, pediatric emergency medicine specialist, head of pediatric emergency medicine at JFK University Medical Center. If we could just, I want to get into this one thing that it's three times higher. The cases are three times higher for this than last year. I'll tell you what that is in a second. But can we just, before we jump to that, could you just repeat? I know you mentioned a couple of them. The symptoms. For pneumonia. So any parent listening now, if their child has these symptoms, they know that that could possibly be the case.
So it would be looking for a cough, difficulty breathing, fever, fatigue, some degree of dehydration as well. If they're feeling not so well, they may be dehydrated from lack of intake of oral fluids as well as food.
Whooping cough. I read that it's like three times higher. The cases are three times higher than last year. Are you experiencing that?
We've seen a few cases, more than we've had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, did a numerical count on it, but we are seeing a little bit more of that. Again, it may come back to, you know, are they up to date on their immunizations or not? But I think there could be a couple of reasons for this. You know, maybe the fact that we're actually testing more for it than we did before. And other things to think about is, you know, could this have possibly mutated a little bit? Possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then, again, the issue before with regard to immunizations, are people still behind in their vaccines, secondary to the pandemic, and they still haven't caught up yet?
So you're testing for whooping cough, but I thought that whooping cough, it's obvious you have it, right? You're
not
whooping.
Always.
What?
Not always.
No?
Not always, because early on in the illness, it may mimic every other viral illness with the same type of symptoms, with runny nose, some mm-hmm. occasional cough, and some low-grade fever. So it may not signal itself as pertussis yet,
mm-hmm.
Certainly in the early on part of it. I think what you'd be concerned about is, again, getting the immunization status. If they're not up to date with immunizations, then certainly that would be in the consideration for an etiology for their illness. But in the early stages, it may be indistinguishable from other illnesses.
And there may not even be a cough involved.
There may not be, or it's an occasional one, but it's nothing that would probably get your attention. It's only when it progresses to the stage two part of it, where they start developing these what we call coughing paroxysms, where it's basically they cough, 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 and they're unable to catch their breath. And then at the end of this series of coughs,
mm-hmm.
they take a deep breath in, and that's where people hear the whoop. They go, so that's the whoop. But that's not the early stage. And that particular stage may, be present about from one week. And then, you have these coughing episodes, may have vomiting after the coughing, and then that whoop. And then the patients generally feel exhausted after that. And sometimes these can be associated with some color change, like cyanosis, because they just basically coughing so much and not getting oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Then they do the whoop.
This
can be very serious.
Is this the only ailment that where it's named after the sound? It seems most sicknesses, they have a very technical, medical name, and this is like, oh, we'll call it whooping.
Well, I think it's because it's been around for a while.
Uh-huh.
So it was probably whooping before they knew it was pertussis with a name, from ages.
I just find that funny because you can think of other sounds we make with other sicknesses. Sounds like you might have a chew sneeze. So whooping cough.
I think that's probably because it's been around, for a while, and it's prior to the vaccines itself, and this was the thing that was the distinguishing part of
mm-hmm.
this particular.
Oh, sure, I get why they did it. I wish they did it for all of that. Then I'd be able to identify it all. It'd be great.
Exactly.
I know
exactly.
It is hard to, you said it's hard to diagnose. How do you diagnose it? Because, if it's so similar to other respiratory illnesses, mm-hmm. how do you differentiate between what it might be and what it is,
Well, what we have the luxury of now is we have these multi-panel virus tests that we test for numerous viruses. I think we have a panel of about 18 different viruses that we can test for at the JFK PZR.
Mm-hmm.
And pertussis would be one of those things that would come up, and be positive for the organism that's responsible for pertussis, which is Bordetella pertussis. So that would be positive. This is how we diagnose it, aside from the obvious whoop.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's generally a little bit later than like a 1 week. So that 1 week time frame mm-hmm. that we're talking about.
So it's kind of like when the mechanic hooks the car up to a machine and it just gives you a code.
Mm-hmm.
You're just doing a test and it could be a multitude of things. Because it wasn't that way for COVID, right? COVID was just a COVID test.
COVID was just a COVID test.
Yeah.
I mean, we have coupled it with other tests that were, we were probably seeing at the same time was like RSV and flu A and B. Generally, it was our panel, our abbreviated panel, but we have the more extensive one that we use there for certainly further diagnostic findings that we would be important for us to initiate treatment or find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So now it's combined.
So no, it's combined.
Okay.
Yeah.
Regarding the whooping cough, how long does that? And if you don't have the vaccine, if you don't get the vaccine, and then you get it, how are we treating this? And what's the fastest we can get rid of it? Like, how long are you going to have this?
Well, you know, the symptom itself may last for a few weeks, even a month or more. But generally, what we, once we get the diagnosis, we initiate treatment with antibiotics. And then what we also do, which is very important too, is we have to figure out who this patient came in contact with, because it's very, very contagious.
Yeah, it's contagious, so, and it's serious, as you said.
Exactly, very serious. So therefore, you know, we have to do basic contact tracing and kind of figure out who else, and then they would also need to be treated as well. And this would also include healthcare providers that are taking care of the patient in the emergency department, just figuring out who they are and checking their immunization status,
mm-hmm.
and probably initiate prophylactic treatment as well.
Well, it's assumed that the staff is going to have their shots, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's pretty much mandatory, right? If you work in a hospital, that you need to have all you updated on all your shots.
Yep, this is just a normal infectious control process that they do.
So this question is for parents. You diagnose my son or daughter with whooping cough. How long do they need to stay out of school?
Well, it can take probably about a week or so.
Okay.
Yeah. But, the issue is that it's hard to say exactly, but usually it's probably about a week to 10 days or so.
And what's the sign for that? How do they get to, get cleared to go back to school? Because obviously you don't want kids go to school with colds all the time, but if you're going with whooping cough, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah. So, I think the clearance for school, that would probably be certainly up to the date, with up to the pediatrician to do that, because they have to make sure that they're fever free, they're not coughing,
mm-hmm.
and at a risk, and they may even have to wear a mask for a period of time.
Yeah, and it's hard to know because all the symptoms are similar. So when you got a kid coughing in a classroom, that could just be a cough, or it could be whooping cough, and I guess that's how it gets spread around among the kids.
Given the odds, Joe, it's probably not going to be pertussis,
but
that's a possibility. You know, the other thing that is very important is the fact that this presents potentially problems for the younger kids that are certainly under 2 months of age. So where they have not gotten their first immunization yet with DPT. Mm-hmm. But what's very important is the fact that the vaccine is actually is available for pregnant women, generally given around the 32nd to 36th week of pregnancy,
okay,
which will allow for the buildup of antibodies. And allow protect the baby once the baby's born, because it'll be protect them from the time frame in between when they're born to 2 months of age when they get their first immunizations.
All right, cool. Dr. Frank Cunningham, pediatric emergency medicine specialist, head of pediatric emergency medicine at JFK University Medical Center. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Joel.
For more info, go to jfkmc.org, or for a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com or magic983.com. JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and I'll talk to you next week.